Producing and processing fabric and apparel is highly polluting. It's also a significant contributor to climate change through heavy greenhouse gas emissions. It's also highly wasteful, with more than half of all garments being produced are landfilled or incinerated within 1 year. That wasteful consumption also happens to tie directly into biodiversity loss and pandemics.
That was Vicky Kalb, ESG and sustainability analyst at UBS Global Research, who is describing the fast fashion industry where garments that are designed not to last are created at scale in a worldwide business that has a heavy carbon footprint, but where consumers are now beginning to act with their wallets. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Business Unusual, a partnership between the Wall Street Journal Custom Content and UBS. I'm your host, Philippa Layton-Jones, editor-at-large of the Wall Street Journal Custom Content, and Vicky is here to discuss how fast fashion is fiendishly complex to evaluate and track, how consumer awareness of fast fashion's environmental impact is growing, and what that might mean economically for the sector. Vicky, it's wonderful to have you here. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Business Unusual.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, Vicky, I want to mention here your UBS Global Research Q-Series Fast Fashion Report from April 2021, which frankly makes for incredibly sobering reading. It paints a picture of a fashion industry that's producing garments at a vast scale for rapid disposal. Can you tell us more about that?
I started on this project because we were noticing a significant increase in two things. First was press commentary and other campaign group messaging around the environmental impact of fast fashion. Now, that could, of course, be related to heightened awareness around climate change and sustainability issues more broadly. But secondly, we were also noticing more activity from companies around sustainability issues. So that could be anything from issuing a sustainability policy or commitment to making changes to product lines to incorporate recycled polyester or organic cotton, for example. Now, it almost goes without saying, but changes to business practices are usually a response to either an anticipated regulatory change or a change in consumer behavior or both. Now, in terms of evaluating the situation, the report starts with a discussion around the scope of the environmental footprint and also goes into a deep dive on the supply chain, which is the cause of quite a bit of that environmental impact. Now, you mentioned the scale, and that was one of the really striking findings, that there are now well over 100 billion garment units produced per year. And the majority of those items are landfilled or incinerated within the first year of production, which is, of course, incredibly wasteful and also contributes meaningfully to climate change. Now, major scientific papers have also linked wasteful consumption to climate change, but also biodiversity loss. And biodiversity loss in particular is linked back to infectious disease and pandemic incidences. The next step was to gather as much data as I could find to try and answer the question, what would happen if consumers became more aware of that environmental impact and if they then reacted by buying fewer clothes? Consumer behavior is obviously notoriously difficult to forecast. So what I did was to look at a wide range of data sources, and what we discovered was actually that sustainability considerations can affect consumer behavior more quickly than you might expect, but they can also have a more significant impact than you might expect. Examples we used were things like sugar taxes on soft drinks, which resulted in a 25% drop in sales, but then also things like flight shaming, now obviously prior to COVID. UBS Evidence Lab also ran a survey to determine if consumers were aware of that environmental impact, and if so, had they changed their behavior as a result? And the answer was yes in both cases. One other UBS Evidence Lab data asset that my colleagues reviewed with me was a look at retail sustainability-related mentions in the public domain, and those tended to be negative, not positive. Now, we used that as a sentiment indicator. So in the end, by putting all of those data sources together, we came up with an estimate of a potential 10 to 30% decline over an up to 10-year period in the total number of high-volume, low-value apparel units sold.
So, Vicky, the picture you've just painted there is one of incredible complexity by the sounds of it. And it sounds like a fiendishly difficult sector to form an accurate picture of how this industry actually works and all of the supply chains, especially at the scale you just mentioned. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the reasons for that complexity?
Complexity is actually very common when you're talking about sustainability issues. You're dealing with a lot of different moving parts. They're all interconnected. They affect each other. The way we like to think about it, describe it in sustainability circles, is to talk about systems thinking. And what we mean by that is to try and think laterally across the entirety of the concept, so the whole system, rather than only taking one part of the issue into consideration. So, for example, in thinking about fast fashion, you don't just want to look at retail point of sale. You need to look at the entire supply chain right through to the end of the life of a garment. In terms of fast fashion specifically, the really difficult part of the industry is the supply chain, which you mentioned. Apparel supply chains are opaque. They span multiple countries. They're multi-layered. There's a lot of subcontracting involved. And many retailers don't have line of sight across the whole supply chain. You might have larger retailers that have a very clear idea about the major garment factory suppliers, and in some cases, they're larger fabric suppliers, but not necessarily further back in the chain, and there is a lot of further back in the chain. So if I put it another way, if you dig into the supply chain, it works something like this. And this is an oversimplification. It's not true in all cases. But you start with the fabric raw material. So let's say it's cotton. You have to get hold of cotton from a grower in one country. Then someone else has to turn that cotton into yarn, sometimes in the same country, but not always. Up until this point, most fabric raw material types are interchangeable. So you could, say, substitute in polyester yarn for cotton, except in that case, you're dealing with a petrochemical supplier instead of a farmer, or trees if you're making viscose or that family of fibers. Now, then someone has to turn that yarn into fabric. Often yarns from different raw materials can be blended together. Then you have to treat that fabric. So, for example, by dyeing it or by using a chemical to make it have a certain texture. That can be an entirely different set of suppliers in an entirely different country. Then it goes to a garment factory, again, possibly a different set of suppliers in yet another country. And also garment manufacturing is notorious for subcontracting. And then finally, the garments are shipped to a distribution center, which is often halfway across the world. So when you think about how many different inputs, how many different processes, how many different steps are involved, and how many different people and companies touch various parts of a garment before it gets anywhere near a consumer, it's really easy to get lost in the scale of the problem. And it's also a reason why I really struggle to think of an easy solution from a regulatory perspective. There's so many completely different companies, countries, and processes along the way that it just feels difficult to arrive at an easier regulatory situation.
In terms of how consumers understand this complexity, because, you know, you've been diving into the data here, but a lot of consumers really didn't know much about the pieces of the puzzle that would come together in terms of creating the garments they were buying. But that's changing a little bit, isn't it? And you said at the beginning, and you certainly said in your Q series report, that awareness of fast fashion's significant environmental impact and all of those factors that play into it that you've just described is now growing. So what's behind that trend? And is it possible to get an accurate read on this trend of changing consumer behavior? Are there, as in some sectors, for example, signals that you can trust as indicators of how the trend is likely to play out, and then understand how it will impact certain sectors?
It's difficult to pinpoint an exact specific reason behind the trend. I think it's actually a combination of factors. So everything from that press coverage I mentioned before to campaign group pressure to heightened awareness around climate change, which I also think has been pushed even further by COVID. In terms of the question around how the trend is likely to play out, we can look at other examples, like what's happened in plastic, where consumers are actively shunning plastics, and then companies are having to be really adept in adapting or reacting to that change. Another possible angle is the new European sustainable finance regulation, which have a really heavy emphasis on disclosure. That's obviously going to impact investors and companies before it gets to individual consumers, but I think it's going to be really interesting to see how much more or how much new information we get around both the environmental and social considerations in retail. In terms of how this could impact sectors, the report's got some detailed work on anticipated individual sector impact, and that's across retail, chemicals, real estate, testing services, plus a few more. But the interesting conclusion I thought that the apparel retail analysts generally drew was that there were some companies that could gain market share, and they could do that by having an increased customer focus on sustainability, so that those brands and the retailers who have in the mind of the consumer a credible sustainability offering could in fact gain share from those who don't.
Let's talk about another dynamic here, which is the impact and importance of the younger generation, Gen Alpha to all intents and purposes, on the behavior of their parents, who I guess make up a significant portion of these consumers. Is that a driving force?
Again, it's something that's difficult, if I'd say not impossible, to quantify specifically. But one of the things I found really interesting was that when I was doing the background research for the report and I was talking to experts across the industry, and that absolutely every single person, that's whether they were a retailer, a sourcing expert, an NGO, everyone was mentioning either the Greta effect or something around the next generation of shoppers or something similar. And the point that they were all making was that something is going on with the younger generation, and that this is being held up as a cautionary tale that these younger consumers may actually start walking the walk on sustainable shopping patterns, even if there doesn't seem to be widespread evidence of that happening yet. And similarly, and this is purely anecdotal, I've been really surprised by some of the feedback I've had on the report. And I've lost count of how many times I've been told that a reader was initially dismissive of the possibility that consumer behaviors could change, but then they would launch into telling me a story about how they were being educated by their kids or how their kids have completely changed their shopping behaviors and are actually moving away from buying new clothes.
And so if this trend continues to take hold, can you tell us what kinds of companies will be well-placed to respond and which ones could find it harder to adapt and thrive?
I think that the answer to that question has to start with asking another question, actually, and that's how fast could this happen, if in fact it does? And I treat that like any other standard business competitive issue and say that if conditions were to change very suddenly and very significantly, that's typically quite detrimental across the board. But if that change happens more slowly, that of course gives companies more of a chance to adapt or to react. Now, there's a very simple sounding answer to the question of which companies might be better positioned to deal with this, but of course it's very easy to stand on the outside telling a company what they should be doing. And of course, it's much more difficult to actually be within a company making significant structural adjustments. But the two simplistic answer I would give to a very complicated problem is that I think companies that can convince consumers that they have a truly sustainable product offering, or also perhaps they could offer an element of a circular economy model, so maybe that's a secondhand model or a repair service that they offer, or basically anything that keeps clothing out of the waste stream, could do better over the longer term.
And so let's look at that more broadly as well. How big a threat to the value of the industry is disruption from positive behavioral change, such as reducing the quantity of purchases and consumers discarding those purchases less often?
So this is, of course, going to depend, again, very much on how this issue plays out, how the consumers actually do react, and that timing consideration as to how fast any change does happen will be extremely important. But if you assume that our scenario plays out in full, the impact could, of course, be quite severe. The fast fashion industry in particular embeds planned obsolescence. So where you're selling something to someone, in this case, usually very cheap, very on-trend garment, with the expectation that they're going to use it for a very short time and then immediately buy a replacement item or items. It's a volume model. The other thing to think about is that this isn't necessarily about everyone on the planet immediately halting all clothing purchases. Far from it. You could end up with a really substantial impact if a significant number of people just buy one fewer item, or if a smaller group of people buys two fewer items, and so on. On the other hand, with any change like this, you're also going to have opportunities like all of the activity going on in rental and reuse business models, or where companies are drawing customers in through repair services or something similar to that.
Now, in our very first episode of this Business Unusual series, Spotting the Signals, we talked about the power of using data for better decision making. And I think what you've just described and what we've discovered today is that data isn't always possible to find, even when you look in the most alternative of places. So let me ask you this question instead. What mindsets do you adopt when reading this fast fashion landscape?
I think the absolutely crucial part of that question is mindset. And it's actually something we in the ESG team talk about all the time. We think a mindset shift is required to try and get to grips with these issues in the first place, and then to try and figure out how they're going to manifest in order to get to that decision-making you asked about. In standard financial analysis, you're taught to think linear. Something happens, or the data tells you something, then you interpret it in a certain way and you assume the outcome is straightforward, or maybe that it will happen the same way it happened before. Sustainability considerations, climate change, behavioral change, those don't behave in the same way. And instead, you have to start thinking much, much more broadly. So things like feedback loops or tipping points are important. You can get into uncharted territory quite quickly with positive feedback loops. And those are very common with broader environmental or social considerations. I think your question goes to the heart of what I was trying to do with this report, which is actually to adopt a different mindset. Instead of asking how much more can the fashion industry grow, the project was instead asking a non-standard question, or about a non-standard issue, and one that's not particularly well understood, and also that hasn't broadly happened yet. And of course, that question is, what happens if consumers do start changing their shopping patterns? How do we even go about trying to determine if something like that happens or how it might happen, especially when there isn't any data? But at least we know where to start, which is asking the question in the first place.
So Vicky, you've clearly got some incredibly important work to do here. And thank you so much for sharing this, because I think it's something that gives us all pause for thought next time we are online or at the shops. Thank you so much for joining us and for sharing this incredibly complex picture with us that is nevertheless incredibly important in climate and other terms. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
So awareness of fast fashion's significant environmental impact is growing, but quantifying changes in consumer behaviors is fraught with difficulty. As Vicky said, UBS analysts calculate that by looking at a combination of sentiment indicators, there is a potential 10 to 30% decline over an up to 10-year period in low-value, high-volume units sold. And companies are now responding. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Business Unusual, a partnership between the Wall Street Journal Custom Content and UBS, where we were talking to Vicky Kalb, ESG and Sustainability Analyst at UBS Global Research. I've been your host, Philippa Layton-Jones.
Wall Street Journal Custom Content is a division of the Wall Street Journal Advertising Department. The Wall Street Journal Newsroom was not involved in the creation of this content.